Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the show about health and natural medicine. It's Monday, March 13th, 2023, live to be broadcast on Wednesday, March 15th, 2023, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also check out my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. Ron, did you say that there's another service where you noticed that we're at?
Yeah, there is another service. I have to go over here to my screen here.
Okay, so let me know when you find it.
It's also at fmradiofree.com.
It's at fmradiofree.com, right. Just so you know.
There you go.
Okay. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, of course, I prepared a lot of stuff for today, and then more stuff happened that I kind of want to talk about. So before I get into, I told you I was going to talk about cardiovascular stuff, and I was going to start by talking about cholesterol and statins and things like that, because I haven't talked about that in a while. We'll get into that. But first, I wanted to talk about respiratory allergies, and I'm going to riff, so I don't have anything written down. So it's as though you were at a doctor's visit with me, where I am actually, you're walking in, I'm saying, how can I help you today? And you say, well, I have seasonal allergies. What can you do for me, doc? And of course, I would say, well, this is naturopathic medicine. I don't do anything for you. You do it all. You're empowered. You get to help yourself with your own healing. And I'm going to give you ideas about how to help yourself with that. So one of the things that you may realize is going on is that allergy season has already started. So I start getting patients coming in and they're talking to me about how they're getting sinus infections. And I ask them, do you know if this started with a cold or do you have allergies? Sometimes they don't know. Most of the time, people with respiratory allergies know that they have them. And so right now, we're seeing people starting with symptoms already. And part of why we're seeing that is because it's been such a warm winter. So the first mention of anything related to allergies, one of the things I do, and you can do this too if you like, is go on to your favorite weather service. If you have a weather app, your weather app generally tells you about air conditions. It's going to tell you about pollution conditions, visibility conditions, whether it's a good idea to go out and exercise conditions, and of course, it's going to tell you the weather. And the other thing that it tells you is the pollen count. And when it tells you the pollen count, it generally also tells you which pollens are out and about. And the ones that seem to come up first, all along the eastern seaboard, all the way down to Florida, seems to be cedar and juniper. They tend to pop first. And you may have heard me say this before, but one of the things I do is I live on a road that is perpendicular at the very end of the road, the end of the road that interfaces with the local state highway. It interfaces with a ridge. And as I'm driving down that road, I can see the ridge. And what I see on the ridge is I see the trees that are at the top of the ridge. The trees sit above the houses that are there. And as you go from that state highway, if you were to go, you know, if you ride your bike up that road, you notice that, oh, I'm going straight up. You go up a couple hundred feet. And so when you're driving down our road, you can see that ridge. And what I notice is all of the trees across there. And as the season advances, I see the color of the trees changing. So I think that the trees right now are just starting to get little bits of red and orange on them. And the red and orange happens when the trees start to make buds. And that's what I notice. And that, you know, if you look at those trees in December and January, they look very, very gray. And right now, when I look at them, they're starting to just begin to look a little bit of orange and red. So there's definitely some buds happening. The other thing you can do is you can go out in your yard. If you have some trees in your yard, you can start to look to see if there are buds. We have an azalea rhododendron. It's a very large bush that makes these beautiful pink flowers, and it's a real treat, and often it makes the pink flowers the first week of the year, and that's when I go see my mother, so I miss its peak, which is unfortunate, but but sometimes I get either end of it. But it's this gorgeous, gorgeous pink color. And right now, it has buds on it.
Mm.
Yeah, it's got some buds on it. So it's getting ready. We're not going to get flowers until early May. Who knows? Maybe if we get the flowers in April, that will be pretty, but I won't be happy about it. The other thing I'm concerned about with this warm winter is that there's going to be more bugs, including ticks. So be very, very careful. And even now, I've had people come in saying I had a tick bite already because people are starting to clear their yards. They're starting to rake out, and they'll pick up sticks and rake out leaves. And there's definitely ticks around. So it's a really good idea if you're going to be working outside, if you're working with wood, if you are, you know, hauling wood, chopping wood. Which many people do because it's still cold out and people are still using their wood stoves, especially because we're going to get some weather tonight and tomorrow, supposedly. So when you're working with wood, the ticks can hide in the woodsheds, in the wood piles. The other thing is when you're clearing out leaves, if you haven't cleared out all the leaves from your garden and you're starting to prepare your garden, ticks love to hang out there. They love to hang out in damp places. They don't sit out in the open. A tick that's sitting out in the open that is uncovered and dries out will die. So if you are digging under leaves, even if it's cold under those leaves, the ticks can be there. So wear bug repellent, insect repellent, natural, or use some DEET or use some bio-UD, something with bio-UD to undecanone. Use something to cover yourself. It's better not to get bitten by a tick, and it's because most ticks, especially the Ixodes ticks, they carry tick-borne illness. They carry Lyme disease. They carry babesiosis, and they usually don't carry just one thing. They carry several things. So be real careful with that. All right, and so. So getting back to allergies, so the pollen is starting to come out, and if you're starting to have symptoms, you can start taking your medicine. If you do the conventional medicine route, you've been told to already start taking your allergy medicine, that if you take any kind of an antihistamine every day, that this is the time to start taking the antihistamine. So if you do that, then you can go ahead and do that. Are there natural medicine things that you can do? Well, of course, I'm going to tell you about what some of those are. So one of the things, of course, is, again, if the table is dirty, clean the table. If the counter is dirty, clean the counter. Don't just put disinfectant spray on the counter and expect to feel better. Clean it off. What does that mean? That means if there's pollen in your nose, clean the pollen out. How do you clean the pollen out? The best way to clean the pollen out is a neti pot or using one of those contraptions like Navage, where you're flushing your nose out. That's the best way to do it. And what do you use in the neti pot? For that purpose, you just need something that's going to be a saline solution that's comfortable for you. You don't need any more than salt. If you want to put things other than salt in it, it will help to clear any microorganisms, because we always have microorganisms in our nose. We always have fungus, mold, bacteria from dust mites. There's always stuff growing in your nose. So salt is antimicrobial. If you just use salt, you're going to kill most of what's in your nose. But if you want to add essential oils are very refreshing. They tend to open up your sinuses. They feel good and they can even smell good. So if you are using a neti pot, you can put a drop or two of tea tree oil in your neti pot. Tea tree oil works. Thyme oil is a great one. Rosemary oil is a great one. Even lavender, a drop or two of lavender will be just fine. Anything in the mint family is going to help to clear your nose. Although I don't believe, can you find out for me what plant family is tea tree oil in? That would be helpful. Okay, so I don't think it's a mint. It's, you know, it's Melaleuca, and it primarily grows in Australia. That's where it was discovered. Anyway, but it is a wonderful all-purpose antimicrobial, and, you know, a great thing that we think of for disinfecting skin and noses and gargling with, and it's a great thing to put in toothpaste. It's very helpful, and if you take it internally, it's antimicrobial internally as well. So
are you ready?
Yes.
It's the Myrtaceae family.
Okay, it's Myrtaceae family. Myrtaceae. Thank you. Family. So it's a myrtle.
Yeah.
It's in the same family as myrtles.
Yeah.
Yes. So can you look in the Myrtaceae?
It's native to Australia.
Indeed. Can you look at the Myrtaceae family and tell me what other plants are in the Myrtaceae family?
Oh boy.
Yeah.
We'll see.
It's going to be all kinds of myrtles. Yes. So that's interesting. So it's not a mint. Whereas lavender, yeah, rosemary, thyme are all mints. Lemon balm is a mint in the Laminaceae family. That's mm-hmm. And things in the Laminaceae family generally have a scent to them. They generally have strong essential oils to them. Some of them don't.
It's a species of tree or tall shrub from the myrtle family. Occurs in southeast Queensland and north coast of adjacent ranges of New South Wales, where it grows along streams and swampy flats.
But that's where tea tree oil grows.
Right.
Yeah. No, but right. I want to know what other plants are in the Myrtaceae family.
Trying to figure that out.
Okay. So you get on that and let me know.
That information.
All right. We'll do it another time.
Let me see what I can do.
Okay. In the meantime, I'll continue telling you what to do about your allergies. All right. So the other thing is, when you go outside, you're going to be breathing in pollen, right? You're going to be breathing in pollen. The pollen's going to get on you. Okay. So the absolute most intense thing to do, if you've been spending a lot of time outside and you have a lot of allergies, is that as soon as you get inside, you do a neti pot, or if you're not great about doing neti pots, you can use saline nasal spray. You can use nasal spray that has tea tree oil in it, and with xylitol and grapefruit seed extract if you want to, and other essential oils in it. And Ron has found out the plants in the Myrtaceae family.
Besides myrtle, it would be bay rum tree,
oh,
clove guava, acca, A-C-C-A,
yeah,
allspice, and eucalyptus are some of the notable members.
Eucalyptus
of
is a myrtle. Right. That makes sense, because if you think about how eucalyptus smells and tea tree oil smells, there's some similarities
there.
These
are evergreen, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
right.
What you got.
Thank you. That's been
You're
very
You're welcome.
Yeah. And eucalyptus is another one that's good. You can put a drop or two in your neti pot and in your nasal spray, and that's a good one to have in there as well. Eucalyptus, you can make a spray and spray it in your shower, or you can just use soap that has eucalyptus in it. So eucalyptus soap will be very helpful for creating an essential oil situation where you can breathe that in. You get a steam inhalation, and that's good for your coughs and your nose and helping to clear things out in general. Okay. And so cleaning your nose is the most important thing, because that's where the irritation happens. Gargling is the second thing to do, because there's communication between your nose and your throat. So you clean your nose out, and after you clean your nose out, you gargle, okay? Because as you're breathing in the pollen goes into your throat. It goes through your trachea, so it passes by your throat. You're going to be doing double duty if you clean the pollen out and if you gargle. Okay, so those are important things to do. Then other things to do is when you come in, remember that pollen is covering it. It could be in your hair, and it could be all over your clothes. So if you really suffer, it may be a good idea to just take everything off and throw it in the wash, and take a shower and clean. And if you're that sensitive, that's a good idea. You get in the shower and you rinse off. You may or may not need to shampoo your hair every single time, depending on the length of your hair and how likely it is to stick in your hair. But at least you want to rinse your hair out and take your clothes off and start fresh. And then in terms of the house, the unfortunate thing with having respiratory allergies is if you have your windows open, you get the air from outside and you can get pollen inside. And there are times of year when you start to want to open the windows. That can be problematic if you have respiratory allergies, if you have pollen allergies. Especially tree pollen allergies. And so you may have to close your windows and heat or cool the house appropriately, and then have HEPA filters inside your house. And HEPA filters can be very helpful for pulling particulates out of the air. It tends to make you more comfortable to pull anything out of the air, to pull pollen and dust and mold. And then you just need to keep up whatever the maintenance on your HEPA filter is. We had a situation at work. I think we hadn't changed our HEPA filters situation in a few weeks. And then the HEPA filter started to, they have a light that comes on. Thankfully, they have a light that comes on that changes color if there's something noxious going through the HEPA filter, or something with a lot of particulates and a lot of substances going through the HEPA filter. And all of a sudden, both HEPA filters were reading red. And we're like, oh boy, time to change that. So our HEPA filters, the actual HEPA filter is an accordion-shaped white filter. And we don't need to change that as often as the pre-filter. So the pre-filter is a lattice-shaped contraption with a screen on it. And that you don't change, you merely go and rinse, and it catches a lot of particulates on that. And then behind it is a charcoal filter or a synthetic filter, that black thing that we change. What is that made of, that black thing? I don't know. A black woven foam. Mm-hmm. And that you change. It gets dirty and you toss it and you put in another one. And the company sends you a lot more of those than any of the other things. And when you order the replacement HEPA filters, they send you a whole bunch of those black things too. And way more of the black things than the HEPA filter. So it extends the life of your HEPA filter, but you toss those and you change those. So we changed everything out in both HEPA filters and no more red lights. So you have to make sure you follow the manufacturer's instructions for how often you clean that pre-filter and change out that the black foam filter. However your HEPA filter is constructed, because it'll work better if you do that. And if you want to change those things more frequently than it says, you could do that. Just don't change them less frequently, because then your HEPA filter won't work. But those are really useful things to have in your house. All right, and what about you personally? Some people, my patients come in, they just insist that they can't possibly survive without taking their antihistamines. And that may or may not be true. Experiment with different antihistamines. There's cetirizine, there's levocetirizine, there's diphenhydramine will definitely make you sleepy. But cetirizine and levocetirizine, which are major brand names, those will tend not to make you as sleepy. And you have to be careful, because antihistamines can give you cognitive effects, but cetirizine and levocetirizine tend not to do that. If you have to take an antihistamine, those are the ones to consider. And of course, antihistamines are suppressive. They are suppressing your histamine. They're not doing any strengthening, but they do make you more comfortable. So if you can manage without them, it's better. And that's why I really encourage treat the cause. Get rid of the congestion, get rid of it, use the neti pot, use a natural nasal spray, and keep your nose and keep your throat clean. And if you do those things, you're going to be less likely to need your antihistamines. Now, are there natural antihistamines? Absolutely. So there's two favorite natural antihistamines, wait for it, vitamin C. So you can eat foods with vitamin C in them. You can eat anything citrus, and you can still get tangerines and tangelos and blood oranges and navel oranges. Those are all still available. You can eat those. You can get grapefruits. You can squeeze lemon or lime into your into any drink that you like, or squeeze it over your fish or over your salad. It can be it's very refreshing and very useful. If you can't do citrus for whatever reason, remember that strawberries, where you can get organic strawberries now, they're being shipped in because they're not local. They're not going to be local until like June. But you can get strawberries. Strawberries are high in vitamin C. Another fruit that's really high in vitamin C that we forget about, we were talking about tea tree oil, which comes from Australia, right? Well, guess what? Kiwi fruit is particularly high in vitamin C. Think about when you eat a kiwi fruit, how tart it is. And those are a lovely fruit, and they mix well with other things, and they're great on their own. Very nice in a fruit salad, very nice in a glass of water, a glass of fizzy water. They have a lovely flavor, and they're particularly high in vitamin C. So you can eat those. You can eat peppers, and any kind of pepper, whether it's a green pepper or any colored pepper, any colored bell pepper. You can also eat hot, spicy peppers, and those are high in vitamin C. And then there's Brussels sprouts, and there's Brussels sprouts are high in vitamin C, and leafy greens in general have a decent amount of vitamin C in them. Black currants have a decent amount of vitamin C in them. Then you can also take vitamin C supplements if you want. What I tend to recommend, depending on the person, it's going to depend on the person and how well they're eating, what dose I'm giving. I tend to recommend a lower dose for people who are eating very well, and a higher dose for people who are not eating so well or have a lot of symptoms. And then if they get sick, like if they get a respiratory infection or some kind of infection, then we have you increase the dose. And if the vitamin C has bioflavonoids in it, all the better. And bioflavonoids are organic compounds that are in many fruits and vegetables. And the bioflavonoids tend to be in the parts of the fruit or vegetable that doesn't taste so good. So they're in the pith. So the pith is that thithy part of your fruit. So if you open a banana, you know how inside the banana there's the banana peel. The inside of the banana peel, where's that stringy stuff? You know the stringy stuff in the banana? It's where the bioflavonoids are. Likewise, if you peel an orange or a lemon, any citrus fruit, the bioflavonoids are in the rind. They're particularly in that white stuff, the white pithy stuff that's in the inside of the rind. And also that rindy stuff is what holds holds the fruit together. So most of the bioflavonoids are in the rind. So if you get organic citrus, you can eat the rind. You can eat it straight up if you like it. There's nothing wrong with eating rind. It's not a good idea to eat rind that is not organic because it could have pesticides stuck to it. But you can eat the rind of organic citrus. And if you're not big on eating the rind, there's different things you can do with it. You can cover it in chocolate and bake it or make candy out of it. You can and put a little sugar into it. You can also just grate it into other things. You can grate it into salad. You can grate it into soups. You can grate it over savory things like fish. So find different recipes to use rind in. You can even grind rind into your baking. So you could make a quick bread and grind rind into it, and then you'll have more vitamin C in your rind, in whatever you're baking. So you'll get vitamin C and you'll get bioflavonoids. So bioflavonoids are great anti-inflammatory compounds. And one of the big bioflavonoids is quercetin. Now quercetin, citrus bioflavonoids is what you're going to find in citrus fruits. So you're going to find hesperidin and rutin in those fruits. You're going to tend to find quercetin in onions and some other foods. And these bioflavonoids, if you get vitamin C supplements, you can get vitamin C that has bioflavonoids with it. I also like to recommend that people get mixed ascorbates, like a mineral ascorbate. So remember how, you know, oh, you should take ester C. It's probably a little bit more absorbable because it's instead of ascorbic acid, it's in the ester form. So they've taken off a hydroxyl group that makes it the acid. A hydrogen group that makes it into an acid, and they've added so it's when it's by itself, it's an ester, and then that ester is attached to a mineral. So mineral ascorbates tend to either be calcium ascorbate, potassium ascorbate, or magnesium ascorbate. And your best supplements, the supplements that you're going to absorb the best are going to have all three. So you can look for a supplement that has mixed mineral ascorbates, calcium ascorbate, magnesium ascorbate, and potassium ascorbate. And then if it has all three of those, plus it has bioflavonoids in it, boy, that's a good supplement. And then there are other people who, other studies that suggest that liposomal vitamin C is a good idea. So liposomal vitamin C is going to be attached to a liposome, which is going to be something like phosphatidylcholine. And the idea about liposomal vitamin C is that, again, the liposome, that phosphatidylcholine is part of every cell membrane in your body. So your body's going to look at that liposome and say, hey, I want that for my cell membranes. And so, bleep, that vitamin C is going to be much more likely to be absorbed because your body's going to grab onto that phosphatidylcholine. And when it does that, because it's part of the cell membranes, the substance that it's attached to gets dumped into the cells more readily. So, and for that reason, you could probably take a lower dose of a liposomal product. I have some liposomal vitamin C. I took a little teaspoon of it last night and gave me a little head rush. I'm thinking tonight when I take it, I'm going to take less. So that was exciting. You can get vitamin C. The cheapest way to get vitamin C is in powder. It does come in powder. The problem is then you have to taste it. It's very tart. And if you want to take vitamin C, in powder form because it's less expensive. You can one way to eat it in a way that it might not be too offensive is to put it in applesauce or apple butter. Applesauce and apple butter are great ways to put powders that you're taking in. They mask a lot of things. They don't mask everything. I find that minerals for me, I take taurine, an amino acid, at night, and it's very inexpensive if you have it as a powder, and it's a lovely calming amino acid. It's really good for cleaning out your liver and your gallbladder, and it's very calming. So I like to take it at night. It goes in hummus. I put a little taurine, and I put a little I mix taurine, and I mix moringa powder, which is a wonderful multi-purpose herb with lots of antioxidants and metabolic properties. That's called the miracle tree. So I put a little moringa powder, teaspoon of moringa, a quarter teaspoon of taurine, and then I put a squirt of boron with trace minerals in it in the hummus. Stir it together, and it's a little snack. Now, of course, not everybody eats beans, so that might not work for you. But applesauce and apple butter will cover a lot of things up, and I often recommend applesauce and apple butter for parents who are trying to get kids to take supplements and they're having trouble doing it. So the powders can go in there. Sometimes apple butter works better than applesauce because it's even sweeter. It's just cooked down. There's no added sugar to it. It just tastes really good when it's been cooked for a long time, but it's probably because it increases the sugar content per unit volume. But applesauce and apple butter taste really good. They both do. Okay, so that's so you can also find quercetin as a separate supplement, and quercetin can be a very nice antihistamine. Quercetin can be taken on its own. It can be also reacted into the more absorbable form, more utilizable form, isoquercetrin, and you'll find that. You can also get quercetin phytosome. That's something you can look for. So quercetin also can be attached to phosphatidylcholine and get into the cells better. So those are things that can be helpful. Nettles, stinging nettle, Urtica dioica, is a really great herb to help with allergy symptoms. There are people who report that if they drink nettle tea every day, they feel a lot better. Their allergy symptoms improve. And nettle tea is like nature's multivitamin. It's tastes very green. I'll just warn you right there. But if you don't mind a green tasting tea, it's really nice. It's got a lot of trace minerals in it. It's got a lot of magnesium and macro minerals in it. And it's got substances in it that are antihistamine. So they're mast cell stabilizers. And quercetin also is a mast cell stabilizer. So is vitamin C. They all have that property. What is a mast cell? Do you know what a mast cell is?
Uh-uh.
No. All right. So in your blood, you have these immune globulins called IgE. And the reason they're called IgE is because what they are is actually eosinophils. Eosinophils is a type of white blood cell. And we call them eosinophils because when you put them under a microscope and you stain them with eosin dye, they light up red. So you see them red under the microscope. And they have granules in them that can degranulate. And when they degranulate with histamine. And when you have too much histamine around, you get your symptoms. So eosinophils can be encoded to fight against various substances, and if you have respiratory allergies against trees, you're going to have eosinophils that have been turned into antibodies in IgEs that are encoded specifically for specific substances. So they can be encoded for an oak tree or a walnut tree or an ash tree, or later in the season for ragweed. Or pigweed or other grasses or lamb's ears or whatever it is you're allergic to. And they can also be encoded for foods. So you can have an Ig allergy to shrimp or to a fruit. And you can test for those. And you can test for those when you get those skin prick tests at the allergist. They're looking for a hive to form because you're making antibodies to those whatever substance they injected into your skin. You can also do blood testing where they take blood from you and they are able to measure different immune globulins that are encoded for specific things. So when you use vitamin C or quercetin or stinging nettles, they all stabilize those mast cells so they're less likely to degranulate. So they make you more comfortable. It doesn't exactly treat the cause, but it does make you more comfortable. Although, to some extent, when you consume something like stinging nettles, you're nourishing yourself better. You're eating your food. You're eating better. So when you eat better, you tend to have less allergies. Your level of your threshold of reaction gets raised, so that you can encounter some. You can encounter some allergens, and you might be less likely to show up with an allergic reaction, or your allergic reaction will be milder. So those are some things that work. I have a nice combination that I offer to people. It has stinging nettles. It has eyebright. Eyebright is also a wonderful herb. Eyebright has an affinity for the eyes. There must be substances in it that attach to specific proteins in the eyes. So if one of your symptoms is itchy eyes, itchy runny eyes, eyebright is a great addition to whatever it is that you're taking. And so nettles and eyebright, that's a classic formulation to help people with allergy symptoms. You can get them in tincture form. You can get them in pills. The combination that I have has nettles, eyebright, horseradish. Horseradish is a wonderful herb for just opening up the sinuses and clearing things out. If you can, and the other thing it has in it is elderberry. And elderberry is a wonderful immune tonic. So those four herbs together do lovely things, and some people take those and they don't have to take their antihistamines. If you can eat horseradish and cayenne in your food during allergy season, or at least just horseradish.
Yeah.
We don't eat horseradish a lot. You like it so much and we don't have it.
We don't.
We should have more horseradish. So horseradish is lovely. You think of Passover because we always use horseradish on Passover. But horseradish, it's something that helps to open up your sinuses. It's anti-inflammatory. And spicy foods, they're vasodilatory. They open up circulation. So cayenne and horseradish both do that. They help to open up circulation. They open up respiratory passages too, because they're increasing circulation. They're increasing the circumference of your blood vessels because they help with, they just enhance blood flow. And one of the ways that cayenne works is it's a nitric oxide enhancer. So it increases circulation that way. So it opens up blood vessels. And when you get more flow, when you get more circulation, you'll get more circulation out of your lymphatics. So that's really helpful too. So the thing is, to get less allergy symptoms are an inflammatory event. So things that are an inflammatory event, if you keep your general level of inflammation down, you're going to be less inflamed, right? So how do you keep your level of inflammation down? One way to get inflamed is that thing. That's the most common thing that I treat. What's the most common thing that I treat?
The most common?
Yes, the most common thing that I see in pretty much every single one of my patients, even when they say they don't have it.
Food allergies?
No.
No.
No. Most common thing. Everybody comes in with it, and sometimes they deny it. They come in with other things, but I tell them, okay, what's going on with your...
I have no idea.
Stress. Stress is the number one thing that I treat. Even if you're not coming in with stress as your chief complaint, and I have people come in who they have 20 different things going on. What's your stress level? Oh, I'm not stressed. And I just call me Charlie Kale. BS.
Yeah.
Because everybody has some level of stress. And even if you don't think you have stress, if you do stress-reducing activities, it will help your symptoms. So if you have allergy symptoms or respiratory symptoms of any kind, and you do stress-reducing activities, then that's going to help your symptoms because you're lowering cortisol. Whatever your cortisol is, if you get it lower, you can have less inflammation. Why would cortisol raise your inflammation? Because cortisol's job is to, say it with me. Maybe not everybody knows it, maybe but I not. Say this so much. Cortisol's job is to run around your body, breaking down tissue to turn it into sugar so that you can run away from the bear.
From the bear.
Yes, right. Yeah. That's its job. So what happens when you have increased sugar in your blood? You have increased insulin in your blood because your pancreas is going to notice that your insulin is elevated, and it's going to kick out more insulin. Your pancreas will notice that your blood sugar is elevated, so it's going to kick out more insulin to pull the sugar out of your blood, and then you're going to now your insulin is raised. Insulin doesn't just pull sugar out of your blood. It kicks up a bunch of inflammatory compounds, for example, insulin like growth factor 1 and a bunch of other stuff. So if you have more sugar and you have more cortisol, you're going to have more insulin, you're going to have more inflammation. So if you keep your blood sugar down, if you keep your cortisol down, you keep your blood sugar down, you're going to have less symptoms. That means reducing stress. How do you reduce stress? Do less stuff. Figure out the stressors in your life and get to work on them. If there are things that you can control, it's always a good idea. And I never generalize, but it's always a good idea to do stress reducing activities, whatever that is for you. And doing stress reducing activities can be, again, doing less stuff, resting. Ron and I, even though it was in the 40s yesterday, on our patio, we have a little cute patio in our backyard, we pulled out chairs and we sat in the sun because it was so sunny that if we sat there, we both had sweatshirts on, and I actually pulled out a blanket, but it was so warm in the sun that we were able to sit out in the sun and just relax. And we just sat in the sun, played with our tablets and read books and drank tea I had a fizzy drink. It was very nice. What fizzy drink did I have, you may ask? Did I have a Coke? No, I did not. I had a drink that you can buy from the grocery store, which has a splash of fruit juice in it. The whole can has maybe 7 calories in it, and because it has that amount of fruit juice in it. And it's very refreshing. The one I had was grapefruit flavored. I actually squeezed lemon into it as well. So I had a fizzy, refreshing drink. So it was seltzer water, basically, with fruit juice in it, and no caffeine, no phosphoric acid, no chemicals, and no aspartame, nothing like that. So we just sat in the sun and just sat there. I find it very relaxing to read books. I've been enjoying going to the library and getting paper books out. And the reason I choose to get paper books is because I find that looking at paper books is less stressful than looking at screens. Like right now I've got 2 screens in front of me. I'm reading off a screen that has my summary on it, and I'm reading off, and then I'm looking at my Facebook Live on my tablet. By the way, if you're noticing that I'm horizontal today, I don't like the way this looks as much. And it doesn't accentuate my best features. And you see parts of the room that I'm not crazy about. The reason for that is, I forgot to charge my tablet. And when I went to open the tablet, I saw that the charge was at 16%, and the charger is on what would be the bottom of the tablet. It's opposite the camera. So if I were to flip this over, you'll see that this is not a good view. So you can't turn your phone while live. Did you know that? Usually the camera's over here on the left side of the screen and it's facing up. So you get a better view of me. Because I was afraid that the tablet would lose charge because it had so little charge in it when I got going, I have the charger sitting over here so that it's not sitting on the charger and it's plugged in. So you're not going to lose me. And so you have to get a different view of me today. And next week I'll try to remember to
I get a different view of you every day.
You do. You get all kinds of views of me. I do. Yes. That's great. Okay. So reducing inflammation, how are you going to do that? So there's herbal things you can do and there's just life things you can do. Stress reduction. Would you believe that yoga and meditation and prayer and time with pets and time with loved ones and activities where you're not stressed out, all of those things help to reduce inflammation, because when you have inflammation, like I said, you raise insulin and other inflammatory compounds, your interleukins and cytokines, And all of those things are going to keep you more inflamed and they're going to lower your symptom threshold. So relaxing and reducing stress is really helpful. And it's whatever stress reducing activities you like to do. Taking naps, leisure walks in nature. Now, of course, the leisure walks in nature, now you're breathing in the pollen, but that's where some of these other herbs come in. So that means that other herbs that make you feel better can help your allergies. So nerving herbs like Tulsi and ashwagandha and linden and lemon balm and oat straw all can be helpful for allergies because they help you to be calmer and they help you to lower your cortisol. A supplement like phosphorylated serine also lowers your cortisol. So anything that lowers your cortisol is going to help you with your allergies, and anything that lowers inflammation is going to help with your allergies. So can fish oil help with your allergies and other anti-inflammatory oils? So fish oil has EPA and DHA in it, both of which are anti-inflammatory. And so they do a couple things. They reduce the inflammation in the PGE1 and PGE3 series. By stimulating the PGE1, PGE3 series. Those are your anti-inflammatory essential fatty acids. And then you have your inflammatory essential fatty acids that are more active, your prostaglandins, your PGE2s, like your arachidonic acid, and those increase inflammation. So if you predominate the PGE1 and the PGE3, you're going to have less inflammation. And if you have less inflammation, you're going to be likely to have less symptoms. So that's one way that essential fatty acids work. Another way that essential fatty acids work is structural. So if you have healthy cells, essential fatty acids are part of all of the cell membranes in your body. And so if you have healthy cells, you're going to get more nutrition in and out of those cells. So if you're taking for example, your liposomal vitamin C, you have to have healthy liposomes around your cell membranes to get that vitamin C into the cells. So if you're taking essential fatty acids or you're eating fish a couple of times a week, if you're just taking nice fish oil, you're going to have healthy, strong essential fatty acids around your cell membranes, and you're going to have less inflammation. Plus all the other things they do. Fish oil, because it's so good, because you're a fathead. I don't mean that as an insult. Hey. You're a fathead. I'm a fathead. We're all a fathead. So what's in this brain of mine? Lots of DHA, docosahexaenoic acid. And docosahexaenoic acid is part of the structure of your nerves. So if you're ingesting a fair bit of docosahexaenoic acid, you're going to be more likely to have healthy brain function and healthy cell function all over your body. And who doesn't want more healthy cell function? Mm-hmm. So fish oil can help with that. So can GLA, that's gamma linolenic acid. And you can find gamma linolenic acid. It's a great anti-inflammatory, helpful for pain. GLA is also helpful if you're a postmenopausal lady, peri and postmenopausal lady like me. I'm really post. You may be peri. Anyway, if you're dealing with some vasomotor symptoms, it can help with that. And it's not a phytoestrogen, so it's safe for people who have estrogenic issues. So if you're taking tamoxifen, for example, for prevention of breast cancer recurrence, you can take GLA, you can take borage oil, you can take evening primrose oil, you can take blackcurrant oil. They all have gamma linolenic acid in a GLA. And those, as they're anti-inflammatories, they can also be helpful for reducing your respiratory symptoms. So those are other anti-inflammatories. So other anti-inflammatories are going to be things like curcumin and resveratrol. Curcumin helps to calm a lot of different interleukins, so it can be really helpful for calming the inflammation that happens as a result of allergies. And resveratrol as well. Resveratrol, among other things, is strengthening to blood vessels, and anything that strengthens your blood vessels is going to make your blood vessels more impervious to these nasty pollens that come in and try to irritate you. So that's where vitamin C, that's one of the ways that it works as well. Vitamin C, one of the ways that vitamin C helps with allergies is because it stimulates collagen production. And when you have healthy collagen, again, your structures are going to be more impervious to offending pollens. So to that end, believe it or not, if you're a fan of collagen, if you like to take collagen for your hair, skin, and nails, collagen can help too. If you're eating soup with bone broth in it, bone broth is going to be helpful as well. And how is bone broth going to be helpful? If you're eating soup with the whole chicken in it or the whole beef or the bones in it, you're going to get healthy immune globulins in your soup. And eating those immune globulins is going to strengthen your immune system. So you're going to have, you're going to have something to fight with your, to fight the inflammation with. So, and the other thing that bone broth does is it has collagen in it. So you're going to use that collagen for structure. It's going to help your entire respiratory tract. It's going to help your, as well as your digestive system. All the systems in your body, all of the places that use collagen are going to fare better for that, and including your muscles and your bones. So you have bone. If you eat bones, it's going to help your bone, help you with your bone structure. So so that's something. All right. And then in terms of foods, if you eat foods that inflame you, foods that inflame you are going to give you more inflammation.
Hmm.
Yeah. If you eat a food that inflames you, you're going to be more inflamed.
Gee.
That's taut.
That's
called a, do you know what a tautology is?
No.
A tautology is when you use a thing to explain a thing.
Okay.
You use the same thing to explain a thing. So if I say, if you want to reduce inflammation, you reduce inflammation. That's a tautology. I think that's right. Anyway, so if you eat inflammatory foods, you're going to have more inflammation. So eat less inflammatory foods. And what are inflammatory foods? Well, in general, the big bullies, shout out to my colleague Jade Tita for Jade, and also Jillian Tita for bringing up for coalescing that idea of the big bullies. The big bullies are processed foods, refined sugar, alcohol, caffeine, especially coffee, gluten, dairy, grains, and GMOs. Those are the big bullies. So those are the most common food intolerances, more common than specifics like soy or nuts or strawberries. Those are just big, broad categories of foods that tend to increase inflammation. So processed food is going to have different kinds of junk in it, and it's going to have chemicals in it, things that your body doesn't know what to do with. And the problem with processed foods when it has chemicals in it is those chemicals get into your digestive system and it can mess up your gut flora because your gut flora doesn't know what to do with it. And you're not going to absorb those items. Some of the items might actually be pro-inflammatory and cause oxidative stress as they're going on through. And then when they get to your colon, where most of the probiotics are, where most of the microflora are, there's microflora going to be like, all right, I'll try to eat this, but it can't metabolize it properly. So now you get weird kinds of gas and bloating, and that makes your digestive system inefficient. When you have gas and bloating in your colon, even if it's your distal colon, the place that's almost on the way out, right? Mm-hmm. You have to realize that your entire digestive system talks to your entire digestive system. And your digestive system talks to your entire nervous system because vagus nerve, right? Vagus nerve, that's that nerve that's the vagabond that starts in your brain and wanders, goes to the side, it goes along the sides of your head, goes through your temples, it goes over your ears, it goes down your jaw, it goes down your neck. So did you know if you massage your neck, you can stimulate your vagus nerve and calm yourself down. You can also put stuff on this dermatome right here. So you can put lavender on your temples and along your jaw, over your ears, and down your neck, and it might calm you down. And you could also do that with magnesium oil, although magnesium oil can be stingy. If you can deal with the stingy, the magnesium oil can be very nice. So there's very simple ways to handle that vagus nerve. So mind you, if you inflame your digestive system, your vagus nerve is going to get upset. And when your vagus nerve is upset, it puts you into fight or flight, which is going to affect your emotions. You're going to feel more stressed. So think about this. When you eat more inflammatory foods, you're gonna feel more stressed. So if you're eating too much sugar, you're going to feel more stressed simply because you're upsetting your gut flora, and your gut flora is going to make more inflammatory compounds. It's not going to be able to clear out your digestive system in the way that it's supposed to. You're going to be reabsorbing more inflammatory compounds. When you have more inflammation, that causes a stress response. Guess what? More cortisol. What do you have when you have more cortisol? It runs around your body, tears up tissue, turns it into sugar, puts sugar into your blood. Now your blood sugar is higher and your insulin is higher. So that's one of the mechanisms by which, so if you do processed foods and you have upset gut flora, you're going to get more inflammation. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. So then you get to refined sugar. Refined sugar causes, it increases inflammation. How does it do that? You eat the refined sugar, your body goes, whoa, that's a lot of sugar. And your pancreas goes, I got to send in some insulin there. And now you have extra insulin trying to pull that extra refined sugar out of your system. And insulin doesn't just pull sugar out of the blood. It increases inflammatory compounds in your blood. And now you have more inflammation. So eating sugar, and that's one of the mechanisms. Sugar also, if you eat too much sugar, you can have more unfriendly yeast like candida growing in your digestive system, which can be inflammatory. Back to all that stuff about increased inflammation. Refined sugar causes other kinds of dysbiosis. Unfriendly gut bacteria are going to eat it, and you're going to get a preponderance of the bacteria that deconjugates compounds. So in your phase one liver detox, you have a system called conjugation that attaches a hydroxyl group to whatever it is you're going to be detoxifying, dissolves it in bile, and then your bile is going to be solubilized, put into your stool, and you're going to poop it out. So if you have unfriendly gut bacteria, which you can have more of from refined sugar, those bacteria are going to cleave off that hydroxyl group, and now that compound is reactivated, gets reabsorbed, and now you have more of whatever toxin it is. It could be a hormone, it could be estrogen, progesterone, testosterone increased in your body. Usually it's estrogen, and when you have too much estrogen in your body, you don't feel good. Having a good amount of estrogen is a good thing, but having too much is not. So eating too much sugar is going to increase inflammation in your body. Then there's dairy. So dairy is problematic because most people have some kind of inflammatory response to dairy. And there have been studies just that dairy is mucogenic. Dairy increases mucus even in people who aren't found to be allergic to it. So dairy proteins increase inflammation. Guess what they do? They increase insulin. Do I have to start over with this? So they increase insulin in everybody, and that's why bodybuilders take whey protein, because whey protein increases insulin, and then you get that bit of increase in insulin. And then if you're not terribly allergic to the whey, you get an increase in insulin, and then the insulin drives the amino acids into your muscles, and that's why they do it. But whey and casein can cause, because it increases insulin, it can increase mucus in everybody, even if you're not particularly allergic to whey and casein. Now, if you are allergic to whey and casein, you're going to get more allergic symptoms, and specifically, you're going to get mucus in your nose and your throat. You have more mucus in your nose and your throat, you're adding insult to injury because you're getting the mucus already from the pollen that's outside. So rethink your consumption of dairy while you're having allergy season. So by the way, I love to tell people to drink kefir, and kefir is a lovely probiotic drink with a lot of internally persisting beneficial probiotic bacteria. But I'm not big on dairy, and I really wanted to try to drink kefir again. Well, I was at the store and I found that there was a nice brand of probiotic drink that was made from cashew. So I bought it, and it's very enjoyable. It tastes kind of like kefir. I don't know if it has all of the species that kefir does. That's one thing I didn't do. I didn't grab the bottle and hold it side by side with a bottle of kefir to see what the species were, because it does list the species that are on there. And the probiotic drink tastes kind of like kefir, with none of the inflammation. It's not quite as tart as kefir, which makes me concerned that it doesn't have as many species, because kefir is a little bit on the funky side. And the reason it's funky like that is because of all the probiotic species. There's a lot of fermentation going on. Mm-hmm. So So getting probiotics on board, I didn't say that, getting probiotics on board can help with your allergy symptoms. And there are even specific probiotics that you can buy that are for allergies. But dairy in general, the casein and whey can increase inflammation. Then there's gluten. Gluten, it depends on the person. Some people are gluten intolerant, some people are not. If you eat a lot of gluten, gluten does have a protein that's it has a starch in it called amylopectin A that increases your blood sugar more than actual sugar does. So what happens when you increase sugar? You increase the insulin. Insulin increases the inflammation. We went through all that already. Mm-hmm. So you can increase your insulin just by consuming gluten. So if you eat a lot of gluten, if you're a big bread person, bread and cereal and pasta person, then you might, eating all that might increase your allergy symptoms. I've decided to not, I would have a sandwich with one piece of gluten-free bread a few times a week. I decided not to do that anymore. That what I'm doing is I'm having going back to breadless sandwiches where I'm having my cold cuts and I'm throwing in fermented vegetables. So this week I'm having fermented beets and carrots and fermented, one of the folks at the farmer's market is making a fermented vegetable mix that has kohlrabi and cauliflower in it. So I'm eating that. And, you know, I have some sauerkraut around. I might eat that. I'm going to get into some more fermented vegetables. So that's gluten. Alcohol is problematic just because it takes up the resources of your liver. And once again, it can raise your blood sugar. And we talked about how all that's happening. And it also happens to be dehydrating. Caffeine is not so much of a problem unless it irritates you and you get inflammation from that. Caffeine all by itself, and in fact, green tea can be helpful for allergy symptoms because of the green tea catechins in it. So any from Camellia sinensis, green and black tea can actually be helpful for allergy symptoms because catechins are anti-inflammatory and they help with allergies. And then if you can avoid GMOs, that goes back to processed food and eating chemicals. So the big things to wrap up, you want to make sure that you're cleaning out your nose and throat, that you're either using a neti pot, a nasal spray. You can even use a Q-tip dipped in saline and essential oil and clean your nose out that way. That you have a HEPA filter at home. And that you're cleaning yourself off when you get in the house and throwing your laundry in the wash or throwing your clothes in the wash right away. Take a shower and reducing inflammatory foods and eating anti-inflammatory foods like lots of fruits and vegetables and staying away from sugar and processed food and stuff like that. So I was going to talk about cardiovascular health, but I guess the allergies took over. They do that. I'm going to go now and we'll talk about cardiovascular stuff next week. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS stores and WHUS.org.